This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Waikato on Free FM 89.0. You're listening to Roseanne Murray, and I have with me today online, actually, Kate Armstrong, who is the chairperson of the Colville Community Health Trust. Welcome, Kate.
Oh, kia ora, Roseanne. Thank you for having me.
Hey, look, it's our pleasure to have you, actually, and it's amazing with technology these days. And I didn't actually even ask you before. I presume you're up in Colville, or whereabouts are you in Aotearoa?
So, funnily enough, I happen to be in Auckland today, but generally I'm up in Port Charles if I'm at home, which is about half an hour north of Colville at the top of the Coromandel Peninsula.
Wow, and so just for a lot of listeners out there, if you were travelling down to, say, Hamilton, how long does it take you to drive there?
So it's around 3.5 hours from Colville, but most of the community lives like I do outside the centre of Colville. So we're about 45 minutes north of Colville. So it would take me about 4 hours to get to Hamilton Central.
Wow. Okay. And you're currently in Auckland, so is it about the same sort of distance, or is it even longer to get there?
It's even longer to get there. Yeah, a little bit longer to get there, maybe another half an hour.
All right. Okay, yep. So you've got to be well planned for making a trip like that, by the sounds of things.
Well planned, and if you have to go for an appointment, it's the whole day. You have to put aside, 7 or 8 hours of driving.
Right, and that's, I know when we were talking off air a little bit about some of the challenges that our rural communities do face out there, and in particular around health services, that's just a good example, isn't it, of how isolated you can be at times.
Absolutely. And with Gabriel, like many areas in New Zealand, we were cut off for about a week without any power or phones. Our mobile phone lines are charged through solar power. And when there's no sun for 3 days, they don't work. And so it was very isolating, but we have a very resilient community, thankfully, who pulled together at the time.
Yeah, no, just amazing just sort of seeing, some of the and hearing about the resilience in all of those communities that were so adversely affected. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but just probably first of all, just maybe for those out there, Colville Community Health Trust, who are they, why was it set up, and what do you actually do?
Well, we're a community-governed and owned charity that was set up about 16, 17 years ago. Really, we modelled the whole process on the Great Barrier Island Trust and its service provider at the time, Aotea Health Limited. So we actually borrowed the whole structure from Great Barrier Island, Aotea. And when I'm at home in Port Charles, I look out at Great Barrier Island, Aotea, with great love and admiration for the people that courageously live and work out there. It's a very, very isolated community. Mm. And an amazing doctor and his wife, Ivan and Leonie Howie, and their friend Adele Robertson, set up an extraordinary system for the island's healthcare. And as a student doctor, I was lucky enough to go out there, not as a student, but in my first years of practice, and learnt from Ivan Howie, who was my mentor as a remote rural GP for many years, and in fact until he passed away only a couple of years ago. And he was working well into his 70s within the island community, and he and his team taught me a huge amount about looking after a small remote community. Right. It was really based on their experiences. I travelled to the island and saw the most extraordinary care and the most fabulous system. And that was set up around a charitable trust that owned and enabled the local service providers owning the equipment and the facility that enabled the local service providers to provide a service. So it was a great asset. The community love it because they feel like they are going to a place that's theirs. You know how if you're needing something, if you need help or you need care, you feel a little bit reluctant sometimes to seek help. But if you're going to your own community facility where you've had fundraisers and you've done a whole lot of activities, you're more likely to attend because you kind of it's part of your own fabric of who you are, because it's your community and you own it. So that's a big part of why we set up a similar structure in Colville.
Oh, that's right. And I know that, just what you've been talking about, a lot of different organisations are finding that people are more likely to come and access their services if it's a friendly, familiar type of environment. So I think what you've just said there, it just so resonates with a lot of different situations and especially smaller communities as well.
Yes, and you find often in small kind of remote rural communities, there's a great diversity of personality types. And in some places, that comes challenging. But when you're a small community, that diversity becomes an asset that you hold on to and evolve and understand and recognise and celebrate, because everybody has their area of challenge, but everyone has their area of skill or genius. And that's a big part of what we try and do in Colville, and I think happens in a lot of remote rural places around the world, but particularly in New Zealand, where we do have a huge amount of diversity around who we are and how we might appear and the things that are valuable to us all. But when we're in a small group, we really need each other, and at times when it's difficult, we do rely on our neighbours and the people next door, and we tend to know who they are, which is a great thing.
It is indeed, and I know probably a lot of people that live in more urban areas probably struggle to actually even know who their neighbours are or where to access support. And I think, unfortunately, maybe one of the only positive things that might have come out of COVID was during those lockdown periods where actually probably you did get to know who your neighbours were. I know quite a few different people that, lived in cul-de-sacs, so all of a sudden, doing the little cul-de-sac sort of get-togethers once a day. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's the thing about human nature, isn't it? You know, when things are difficult and we're limited, it really enables us to see what's important in our lives and what are the things that really matter and how do we work out getting through adversity together. And I think that we have, as a country, I think we did that as well as we could, and everyone has their own views on that, but I think there were some fabulous things that came out of being part of the community, whichever communities you belonged to, and working collaboratively. And we are still in quite challenging times, aren't we? And working together, collaborating and connecting and seeing the value in each other and how we work through things together, I think is going to be a huge part of how we can kind of overcome the next decades or two of challenges that we've got ahead of us all.
That's right. No, some great messaging there. Thank you, Kate. And I think that resonates across all of our different sort of community sectors that we're all sort of working in at the moment, and especially with the financial economic, sort of downturn and the struggles that we're having there, the whole collaborating and partnerships is going to be so key going forward. So a little bit, yeah. So maybe we'll just sort of, come back to the Health Trust itself. And I know you talked about, you've modelled on, the trust that was set up over on Great Barrier Island. So what are some of the amazing things that, the Health Trust does do?
So basically, when we first started trying to provide a service in Colville, as a rural remote GP and nutritional and environmental medicine specialist, I was aware that I was going to be stepping into something that was economically very challenging. The population base wasn't large enough to sustain a sole GP. Generally, you need 2,000 patients to make a business work. Mm-hmm. And I knew that the kind of 1,200 that we had in the area, all of them wouldn't choose to see me, and it would take time, and you can't appeal to everyone. And so I thought, how on earth can we provide a service for this community without having the funding to do so? So Looking to Great Barrier, they had a similar number of people and they had similar challenges. And they had managed to do it by setting up this charitable trust, which was governed by the community. So there are elected members on the trust of the community. And they fundraised and built a building and bought all the equipment that the service providers might need. So we set about doing that in Colville. So we got together with a keen group of about 12 locals. In Colville, we were supported initially by the Colville Co-op, who run the Colville store and cafe, and they have helped to initiate with seed funding a number of community groups in Colville. And so they got behind us and said, yep, we think what you want to do is awesome. You want to set up a charity that will own equipment and work towards owning land and a building so that you can provide a space for service providers to come. And that was the mandate or the plan for the trust. And the Colville Co-op said, yep, here's the $2,000 to get started. So we spent that money on a legal, a skilled man from Auckland whose training was, how do you establish a charitable trust? How do you write a deed? And how do you ensure that the trust ends up meeting its goal, which was a very interesting process. We spent a couple of weekends together and we nutted out how the wording of the deed would flow so that it met the needs of the Charities Commission but also enabled us all as a guiding document so that if at any time as a group we weren't sure how to proceed, we could look back at our deed and be guided. It's slightly different to some charities. We had a potential for 70% of the trustees to be voted on by as community representatives, but we also had up to 30% of the trustees being appointed either by local service providers or council representatives or St John representatives. People who we felt might be able to enable our trust were potentially appointed as trustees. And over the years, who's been appointed over time has changed. But it's meant that there's always a connection to, are we meeting the needs of our community and are we engaged with the service providers that are providing for our community and how can we facilitate a collaborative relationship?
And that's vitally important. And I think in having that real good mix of, you know, people on your board or your committee that are either, you know, from the community, from, you know, the different diverse, you know, sort of elements that you have within your community, or else you've got the skills, you know, whether it is, you know, someone who has more of a governance background or might be through having a medical background, or it might be just someone who's just a really good networker and can actually make things happen and knows who to contact to get things happening for you. So that's a really great message as well, is just having that right mix on your governance board of your trust.
Absolutely. And it is sometimes a challenge to find those people that have the skill that you need. And I think that's one of the things that we've learned over the last, you know, 16, 17 years, is that as long as you have the vision and mission at heart, you can find the skill. And we definitely have learnt that it's the passion and the drive to fulfil the mission and vision that you really want. Then you go hunting out those people with the skill and see if they can provide what they need. I think breaking things up into a jigsaw puzzle and finding the pieces that you're missing is a really important thing to do as a community. So what we are doing currently in the Health Trust is that we're looking at what does our community have and then what are the things that we need that we don't have and what do those jigsaw puzzle pieces look like and then how can we fill them in a different way. So sadly, our health provider, the practice that I ran for 20 years in Colville, had to close at the end of 2023 because we could not function financially any longer. And that was a huge shift for us in Colville and for myself. And fortunately, through collaboration and communication, we were able to invite our neighbouring practice, Coromandel Family Health Centre, who have been working in Coromandel for over 20 plus years, providing care for their community. And we were able to invite them to the Colville Community Health Trust table and meet with them and say, we'd love you to come and provide a service for our community. We have this building. We have these assets. How can you come and help us? And what do we need to do to make that relationship work? And we're very, very fortunate that the staff, Dr. Brian McLeod, Dr. Sandy Flukes, and Dr. Alex McLeod, took that plea from the community seriously and decided to provide an outreach clinic for our community. And that's what's been happening so far. We hope that we will be able to, in the future, invite more practitioners and more local people to work within our community. And we are really keen to make the most of all of the modern IT systems that are out there, because we understand that the health system and the government funding is extremely difficult. So we're thinking, how can we use the people we have locally to provide service, but key into the experts that we don't have and zoom them in remotely to support the people on the ground? And we're really dedicated as a community to thinking, how can we make this work into the future? And really owning our own equipment, owning our own space that we work from, and working towards our own purpose-built building, which we're doing through another trust called the Colville Project Trust, we as a community feel empowered that we're taking steps to help ourselves. Obviously, we still need the services from the service providers, and obviously there's a huge challenge in that area at the moment. So we're constantly thinking, how can we make it easier for the provider? How can we make it easier for the hospital system to provide care to our people? How can we make it easier for a service provider in Thames like CAPS Hauraki to provide for our community locally? It's just trying to have another look at the picture, break it up into different pieces of what you have and what you don't have, and then fill the bits you don't have in a different way.
Oh, look, I think it's an amazing approach that you have taken, and, you know, need to congratulate you and the rest of the community for actually having the foresight initially in building your own building and having all your own equipment. I think that's amazing, because I suppose, as you've already shown, you know, like where one service provider can no longer, you know, provide what's required for your community, you've then been able to bring in and welcome, you know, your neighbouring service provider. But also, too, I think it really just helps, I think, with that whole sustainability, doesn't it? You know, and thinking ahead now to how you can utilise, embrace and utilise IT these days to support you as well.
Absolutely. So we are still working towards our own building. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to mislead you there. We are renting a community building at the moment,
right,
which we're leasing on to the service providers with the equipment all in place. But the Colville Project Trust has bought land for our community and is working towards our own purpose-built facility. So currently it's a rented space that we're very grateful to the family that have rented that to us for many, many years. Even though they've got many things they'd like to do with it, they have generously given it to us at an extremely good rental situation until we do have our own building. And yes, for future sustainability and resilience, owning our own building and being able to bring the income back into the community that we would achieve from renting that out to different service providers as a purpose-built space is something that we are looking forward to in the future. So we haven't been fortunate enough to have our own space that we own yet as a community, but we are well on the way to that. Great Barrier was able to do that early on in its journey, and for us it took a lot longer, but we have been a little bolder in our approach than Great Barrier. So Great Barrier bought they got given a small amount of council land, and then they bought a house which they moved onto it and turned into a purpose-built building. And they were able to achieve that quite early. But what Barrier hasn't been able to do recently, which they wanted to do, was build a retirement supported living setup for the elderly on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, they weren't able to do that because there wasn't space on the land they had, and the land they wanted to use was fragmented from the other service providers. So we looked at that and went, okay, we need to purchase a larger piece of land that has capacity to do more for our community into the future. And what we're also aware of in Colville is that we're very flood prone, and the whole village itself is within the tsunami danger area.
Mm-hmm.
And our most at-risk buildings are our local school and our local playgroup. So we are very aware that we may need to, over time, in the kind of 50, 100-year plan, move the whole village. So we worked together, the Colville Community Health Trust worked together with the Colville Social Services Collective, which is now called the Colville Junction, to form the Colville Project Trust. And that trust is bought this beautiful piece of land. I think it's about 35 hectares, and we are developing that for our initially resource centre, which will be where we will house our service providers. And then we're going to be looking at supported living and living for older persons and living for people who have still who want to work in our community. Because finding somewhere to rent is extremely difficult. Something like 40% of our houses are empty 90% of the time because they're batch owners and they want them empty for when they come for their holidays, but they're not available to community members who want to work or people with skills. So we've identified these holes in our accommodation options for people that want to come to our community that have skills. We have families that want to come, but they, you know, need to live in a caravan for a year, or they might need to stay with family because there is nowhere to rent. So with our development of the Colville Project Trust, we have been looking at, again, what do we have? We have a beautiful environment that we need to care for. We have a beautiful piece of land that's got regenerating bush that needs to be pest controlled and ecologically set up. We have a community that's keen on resilience and learning from nature how to ensure that we have the best outcome from the land that we're living on and how we work together. So we're really working hard towards our purpose-built facility. But currently, the Colville Community Health Trust runs the rented building and the equipment and provides that space for service providers. And we are now looking towards how we can further evolve that to meet the needs for our community in the current challenge.
Wow, sounds like just some amazing thinking that's been going on up there in your community. And I think that's where the advantage, I think, sometimes too, of a smaller community all coming together. And you're sort of looking at a strength-based approach. You know, you've said, you know, you're looking at what have we got and what can we build on, you know, and the fact that you've got this amazing environment up there, and I'm sure you have beautiful weather as well. Why wouldn't you want to come up and either visit or live in Colville? Just touching base on the accommodation, and it's just something that you just don't think about sometimes, do you? You know, about it's great that you've got people that want to come up there and live, but there's just not the accommodation available with so many batches there. So again, that'll be something that'll be interesting to see whether in the future, you know, you're able to look at some sort of, you know, residential complex, you know, for these people, but also too for being able to keep people in your community. And I just also did not think about this, you know, where do our elderly go from those small rural communities when they need support each day?
Exactly. And you know, we have had people in our community, you know, having to put their loved ones as far as you know, this outskirts of Hamilton trying to find a rest home or hospital where they could be. We have a fabulous rest home hospital, Phoenix House, in Coromandel Town, which has been run by a local family for many decades. And they have the most fabulous environment there, which is like a whānau family relationship care facility. And it's amazing. And I've worked there and I've had family stay there as inpatients. And it is wonderful. But it's a small facility and it doesn't have beds. And, you know, when you ring up saying, oh, I've got somebody who needs a palliative bed and the family really want to look after them at home, but they don't have the capacity and they need full-time nursing and please can we have a bed, you know, and the charge nurse would be like, we'd desperately like to help you, but we just don't have any beds at all. And you you ring around and you find the nearest one is, you know, 3 hours away. Mm. And it's very, very challenging for those families. And the district nursing service and the rural general practice nursing service, you know, try and train up the family members and the local carers to help people at those times. And over the years, there has been a lot of people care for their own at home.
Yep.
It is an extremely big challenge. And if you don't have the skill and you don't have the numbers, it can break people. And no one wants that.
No, that's...
You know, no one wants that to happen to their loved ones when they're distraught and grieving. So, you know, it's really important to have somewhere that you can go that's safe and gives you what you need in those days and hours when you need it. And it can be very challenging. So that's a big part of what we want to do. So we're thinking about, with the Colville Project Trust, we're thinking about the way that the hub of the facility building will have close to it some accommodation that is for high needs palliative care and respite type care spaces. And then further away, kind of more private, there'll be places for people who might want to come and visit to work in the area or might want to do some training to learn how to become a caregiver or might be providing something to the community, perhaps working at the school. You know, there's a whole variety of things that we found over the years. Oh, look, we've got a new teacher, but there's nowhere for her to live. Or we've got a new nurse, but there's nowhere for her to live. And so the community starts rallying around and trying to find somewhere because we're so keen to have these wonderfully skilled people in our community.
Yeah. Hey, look, sorry, Kate, we are actually running out of time and we could probably talk for another half hour, actually. Amazing how quick time goes. You did say off air that there's a community fundraiser coming up. Maybe just a couple of key details on that.
Yes. So later in the year on a long weekend, we're going to have a community connection day. And what we're really hoping to do is to have all of the Colville community charities and organisations that provide for the community open their doors. And we want to welcome all our regular holiday visitors, all the summer batch owners, all of the people that come to the Colville store, all of the people that come to the campgrounds, Otautu, Port Jackson, Waipawau Bay. We'd love you all to come and see what we do in Colville throughout the year to make the rest of the environment and the community services safe for you.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.